listening. Well, Blog
Talk Radio.
T minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
Fire the
Welcome, everyone, to Design for Confidence with Di. My name is Di Riddell. Women 50 plus, or those who soon will be, work with me as a confidence mentor when they've been through a life-changing challenge or they simply wish to boost or refire their confidence. Design for Confidence with Di was chosen because I think we are actually designed for confidence, but each of us are woven differently. We're a generation of women who have lived through massive societal changes in relationships, family, the workforce, community, and even consciousness. And many of us have reinvented ourselves several times over, either by choice or by having it thrust upon us. And we're seeking something new, something deeper, something beyond, and we go out and get it. In fact, we're designing and redesigning our lives with a greater sense of confidence, belief, and purpose than ever before. You know, design is multifaceted. It's multi-layered, and everyone is different, and so are we. At any time, we can create, repair, or revitalize our very own design. But when we tie them together, we get the very best version of ourselves. And to me, that's what makes mature women so very interesting. I just love great conversations where life's journeys are shared, not simply through the words, but it comes through in the tone, the excitement, the vivacity, and the emotions that are expressed as my guests share their passion. Now, if you're in America and you wish to check in, the call number is 646-716-7979, and we welcome your questions. If you're outside of North America, click on the link http://tobtr.com/9800157, follow the link and leave a message. Or you can leave a private message on Facebook and they will be passed on to our guest. Our guest speaker today is a colleague of mine. Her name is Pam Gritt. And Pam is many things in life, but today she's the master of 50 things in your wardrobe. Welcome, Pam. It's lovely to have you here today.
Great to be with you, Di, on this very steamy Brisbane morning.
Oh, yeah. We're really feeling it, aren't we? I'm very much looking forward to speaking with you shortly, and I'm sure our listeners are wondering exactly the same thing. But before we get to that, I have a frequently asked question, and I'll answer one of these on each session. Can we become confident at any age? Certainly we can. Confidence is a habit, just like getting dressed. It takes practice, just like it did when you learned to tie your shoelaces. True, the younger we start, the better. However, my thoughts are we start with where you are right now and work on it together. There can be a myriad of reasons why we're not feeling confident in maturity. And if it's taken a lifetime to come to the spot where we don't have confidence, it's not going to happen in 5 minutes. But, you know, let's be honest, life's not all sunshine and rainbows. Sometimes we struggle within ourselves, sometimes we lose our footing, and sometimes we simply need to surrender and reach out for help. When you reach out for help, you get to see your challenge through another set of ears, another set of eyes, and share from another's heart space. You see, when we're reinventing ourselves, we may experience growth at lightning speed, so it's natural to feel a struggle. It's normal to feel challenged, and it's common that past stuff that is unresolved will come up, and your confidence can slip away at any moment. But if we allow that space, rather than fight it and resist it, find that in those moments we shift, we grow and we become the next version of our very confident selves. Mature women already have so much wisdom within them. Knowing how to access that and bring it forward into your life to serve you today is what I do as a confidence mentor. So each sheet, as I said, each show I'll share a tip or a technique. So if you have a question that you'd like answered, please email me at di@diridell.com, diridell.com. Then tune into the next show to hear your answer. But for now, we're going to meet our beautiful guest, Pam. But before we delve into her fascinating story, I'm going to share a little bit about who she is. Well, from my point of view, she's a minimalist with passion. In 2016, she tackled a year-long project. Her objective was to contain her wardrobe for the year to 50 items of clothing. Can you believe that? 50, listeners. This included shoes, underwear, coats, jackets, socks and stockings. It did not include accessories, the main ones of which Pam wears are earrings and scarves. To help keep her focused on the project and to keep herself honest, she posted pictures and a comment about the project on a 50 Things 2016 Facebook page every day. Pam goes beyond just reducing to 50. Her key purpose was to bring attention to the true cost of the fashion industry, to look at women's self-perception and the effect that the environment of textile production industry. Pam's Facebook page for this project was filled with photos, stories, humour and plain common sense. She showed courage, confidence, purpose and passion. And Pam goes beyond limiting the numbers of clothing and extends to the heart of a woman's self-perception. Pam, you do have some eye-openers to offer our listeners today, haven't you?
Oh, well, I think you hit the nail on the head when you use the term common sense. I like to think that that is really what's at the heart of what drives me, common sense and being confident about who you are. And about in my 60th year, I'm right in the middle of that being confident about who I am and not being too afraid about what other people might think of me. So I took that into the project and it carried me through the year. What can I say?
I think that's absolutely amazing. That's wonderful. And I'm hitting my 70th year this year. Right. Now, it's all about you today. So, Pam, would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself? Just share your story with us.
About me?
Yes, about you.
Okay, separate from the project. Well, I am I'm just about to submit my Doctorate of Creative Writing, so I've been working quite hard on that over the last 2 years, and for that I've written a novel which is set in the town that's my home at the moment, Brisbane, Queensland, Australia. I've had a love of words for years and years and years, although before I got my confidence, in fact, until I reached my late 30s, Di, I listened to other people's words. I was too shy is perhaps the wrong word, but I lacked the confidence. I lacked the belief in my own opinions to be able to express them. But I found that. I found that in my late 30s and I've gone on from there. I've done lots of different kinds of work. I guess you'd say I'm an overqualified generalist. I've been a secondary school teacher of English and history. I've worked in the humanitarian aid sector for about 15 years. And then after that, with young children to bring up, I've worked for another 15 or 20 years in the not-for-profit sector in Australia. So managing volunteer programs, doing PR and marketing for not-for-profit organisations. I've managed grant programs, so I have quite a diverse grab bag of skills, I guess you could say.
You most certainly do. That is just amazing. I wasn't aware of all that background on you. That is great.
And I have three adult children, so they're 20, 27, 24 and 20. Youngest one's still at home, and they take up quite a lot of my time and energy because I love them all very, very dearly. And I've lived in the same home in suburban Brisbane for coming up to 20 years this year.
Wow. Oh, that's great. And I'll come back to your novel. Just tell me about your novel. Now, you mentioned before that you'd written a novel set in Brisbane. So is it a whodunit? Is it a drama?
No, it's I guess it would fit into the category of what's generally called literary fiction. So my interest particularly in writing is about discovering the beauty and the strengths of ordinary people. So that's my big thing. I'm really interested in the lives of ordinary people. So I've very deliberately chosen to set my novel in suburban Brisbane. It's set in Kedron, which is a suburb you may be familiar with. And it follows the lives of nine people who live in a block of apartments, which is actually an old house that's been converted into nine apartments, and it follows their lives and how they weave together in the course of 1 week as the main protagonist is coming up to her 40th birthday and facing the fact that she hasn't spoken to her father for 24 years. So it's a story of someone, I guess, discovering their confidence, Di. So it has a lot of picked up on a lot of the themes that you were talking about you know, facing your fears and realizing that you need to put yourself in the driver's seat in order to live a life that's satisfying and fulfilling.
Mm. Indeed, you do. So leading on from all of that, how did you come up with this, with the whole project of the 50 things in your wardrobe?
Well, I guess I like to think of this project as being something that really brought forward the real me. I've had, like many, many, many of the women and men, I guess, on the planet, I've had a love affair with clothing for most of my life. But I also started to realise in the last few years, particularly after the death of my mother, and with my two sisters, I had the job of disassembling a large old Queenslander that was full of a lifetime of collected stuff, as we like to call it. And this really confronted me with the thought that we go through life and we just we acquire all of these things, and a lot of them just spend a lot of their time just sitting in cupboards and not even seeing the light of day. I have a very good friend who is a sustainability consultant and who in 2014 did a project where she upcycled an item of clothing that someone had given her or from a charity shop every day of the year. So I was inspired by the work of that woman, Jane Milburn, and she was really, really, really about the sustainability of our wardrobe and particularly about natural fibres. So in October of the year before the project, I went through my wardrobe and I got rid of everything that was not made of natural fibre. So I got rid of everything that wasn't either cotton, wool, linen, or silk. So that was the first step. And then in the December of that year, I travelled overseas to visit a daughter who was living in South America. And, you know, I put what I needed for 6 weeks of travelling into a small carry-on size suitcase. And I got a bit of an illness while I was there, so I had a few days lying around on the couch, and I got to thinking, well, if I can live out of that tiny little suitcase for 6 weeks, I reckon I could do that for a whole year. So I Googled small wardrobes. I Googled, you know, different things about simplifying your life. And I came across a lot of different projects that people had done. There was a woman in North America who'd worn the same dress every day for a year. And I thought, well, don't think that would work for me. And there was a man who'd reduced his possessions to, I think it was 133 possessions. And I thought, well, that's not me either. But so I came up with this idea of restricting my wardrobe, and lots of other people had done that too, but they hadn't included, underwear and socks and clothes, socks and stockings and things like that. And they certainly, most people didn't include shoes. So I thought, right, I'm going to make this a real challenge, because I will confess I had more than 50 pairs of shoes in my wardrobe before I started this. And I thought, I'm going to put it all in there, everything. But as you said in your introduction, Di, I have a large collection of earrings, and that is my one thing, my earrings and my scarves, which I've collected over a lifetime. I couldn't let go of them. And, of course, as you would know, it's incredible how you can dress up a wardrobe with a nice pair of earrings or a well-tied scarf.
Absolutely.
So excuse me. I also made a rule for myself that when I was selecting the 50 things, I was not allowed to go out and buy anything new. So I had to make do with what was already in the wardrobe.
Wow.
And that did lead to a little bit of a problem down the track with the underwear, which had already been worn for at least 12 months before I started the project.
But were you allowed to replace?
So what I did, Di, when I hit that roadblock, which was around late May, early June last year, I decided that I would make some new underwear.
Wow.
So I got some of my husband's old business shirts, which are made out of beautiful, best quality, finely woven pure cotton. And as I may have mentioned, I only had 3 pairs of underpants in my 50 items. So I made myself 3 new pairs of knickers out of my husband's old business shirts. And they've been terrific, and he thinks they look great on me.
Isn't that amazing?
So I did need to replace my underwear, but that was the only thing that that actually, you know, had to be ditched in the course of the project.
I shudder at the think of it. I'm sure some of our listeners are too. I looked in my undie drawer when I was getting dressed this morning, and I thought, oh, my goodness, how does Pam do it? How does she do it?
Well, how did I do that? That was actually a question that lots of people wanted to ask me about. You may know that I even had a little interview on national television, and they put that question to me. How on earth can you survive with 2 bras and 3 pairs of underwear? And the answer is, rinse them out when you're under the shower and hang them up, and they dry, you know, within 8-10 hours, even in the middle of winter. So and also I will tell listeners, I traveled quite a bit last year. I had to give a paper at a conference in the UK in their summer. I was travelling around Europe for about 3.5 weeks, I travelled to New Zealand, and I travelled a little bit within Australia, and I managed to get through all of those assignments, washing my undies out at night and hanging them up. I never had a problem. I certainly never had a day die where I had to go out without wearing underwear. So that's not too bad.
Oh, well, I'm told that that's a very powerful thing for a woman to do. I admit I've never tried it.
Well, I wasn't prepared to go there, but I made it through with my three pairs of undies. And actually, one of the things that I did do in January of this year was to pull out some of my underwear that had been stored away during the last year, and I got to having five pairs of undies in the drawer, and I thought, this is too much. I can't deal with opening up the drawer and seeing all these unused items of clothing just sitting there waiting. It's incredible how your perspective changes. And this, again, comes back to this idea of the habits that we form in our lives that we think we're incapable of changing. And I guess that was the other lesson that I learned through the Project I, that every day, every single day of your life is an opportunity to learn something new or to do something different. And you don't need to wait for the 1st of January to roll around to make a resolution to improve something or change something. You can do that today. You can do that at the end of this radio program.
Yes, I could, but I don't think I could. I don't think I'm quite ready for that. I'm doing a big declutter because I'm moving out of my home into something smaller in the next 6 months or so. So I'm starting the declutter thing, but I'm still thinking, oh my goodness, I couldn't reduce it to 50.
Well, obviously, it's not for everybody, but I guess the thing is, you start where you are now. You do what is meaningful for you. And again, going back to your introduction, for me, this was about just asking people to stop and think about when we make the choices about purchasing new clothing, do I really need this? And for me, I guess, after the project, I would say, for me, with my wardrobe now and for the future, I have four big questions that I put to myself when I think about buying something new. Would you like me to share those
questions with you,
Diane? I would love
you, and I'm sure the listeners would love you to share it. Yes, please.
So I guess the first of those questions is to ask yourself, why do I need this? Or why do I think I need this? And do I in asking that question, you will come to your answer. Am I replacing something that's really essential, an item that's worn out? Or is there a particular event or a particular, you know, it might be a job interview or a special party or something that you're going to, that you feel that you need something new? So why do I need this? I think that's a really important question to ask yourself. The second one is pretty obvious. How often will I wear this? And I think, you know, and that's something that we often fall into if we're buying something for a special event. We have this image of ourselves walking into the room, and of course, everybody's going to stop and look at us and say, oh, Pamela, you look fantastic tonight. And you get high on that image of yourself, you know, being observed and looking glamorous. Mm-hmm. But the question is, how often will I wear this? And linked to that, are the laundry requirements for this something that's going to restrict how much I can wear it? And I think that's particularly true in this day and age when so many of our clothes bear that little tag that says dry clean only.
Yes.
Because we all know that dry cleaning is a very expensive process. It takes time to deliver stuff to the dry cleaner and go back and pick it up. But also, you know, it dry cleaning is an industry that uses a lot of very unsafe chemicals. So we do need to think about that. And then when we come to the item itself, we need to think about the colour and the style. Is this something that will last, or is it just this season's colour, this season's style? And that is, I guess, one of the key points that I learned in putting my 50 things together, is to think about how you like to, the image that you like to project of yourself, and how you can put together a wardrobe that actually, you know, brings a coherent sort of image of yourself to the people that you encounter. So that's an important question. Will this style last, or is it just something that's in all the magazines now, so I think I need to have it? And then my fourth question is, who benefits from this purchase? And there, I guess, we're thinking about how the item's been produced, where it's been produced, what sort of labour conditions it's been produced under, and the considerations that are now attached to both our, you know, the rest of the planet and the environment. So those are my four questions. Why do I need this? How often will I wear it? Will this style last? And who benefits or suffers from the purchase? So I think if we ask ourselves those questions, and then there's another tactic that actually my youngest daughter uses quite often. She likes to go and try things on, and then she goes out of the store and she might not go back for another week or two. And if the item's gone, she says, well, that's it, wasn't meant to have it. But she takes time to consider, do I really need this? And she often borrows clothes from friends, and that's something that I think we might start to see more of with younger people, as they're thinking more about their hip pockets and thinking, you know, well, I want to look good on that night, but I don't really need to purchase that thing in order to do that.
Just another way of
thinking about it.
That's right. Pam, just hold it for a sec. We've got a caller here. Let's just see what's going on. Just hold on one. Hello, we have a caller. Marissa? Are you there, Marissa? No. Okay, you still there, Pam?
Yes, I'm here.
I'm not sure what happened. I can't hear anything. So I'm sure that she will send us a message.
Hopefully she will send us a message and we can answer her question.
Hopefully she will send us a message, because when I unmuted her, there was nobody there. So would you, just moving right along, would you consider yourself a minimalist in other parts of your life, or just with your wardrobe?
I think if you walked into my house and saw my book collection, you'd say I'm certainly not a minimalist when it comes to words. I do love books, and I love the actual physical books. I have used a Kindle, but I haven't really been switched on to that. I like to hold a book in my hands. But I did, I mentioned before that after my mother's death, I did some hard thinking about all of the stuff that I have. And I won't say that I'm making a lot of progress there, but I am slowly moving through the various parts of my house and trying to declutter. So, for example, about 4 years ago, I decided to get out my Good Dinner service. Now, I know that lots of people have talked about this. I've talked to many people about this in the last few years, but I had a a beautiful Villeroy and Boch dinner service that we purchased when we lived in Europe. I think it had been used twice in the first 34 years of my marriage. And I thought, this is outrageous. It's absolutely ridiculous. And this came from unpacking seven dinner services that my mother had, some of which she'd been given as wedding presents and which just, you know, sat in cupboards. She even had one of my grandmother's old dinner services, which didn't get discarded. But I thought, if I have this beautiful thing sitting in the cupboard, my children are grown up, doesn't make any sense to have it sitting in the cupboard. So I got rid of the utilitarian white everyday dinner service, packed that up and gave that to the Salvos, and got my beautiful porcelain china dinner service, and it goes in the dishwasher every day. And yes, a couple of plates have cracked, and you know, one of the bread and butter plates got broken, but that's what happens in life, you know, accidents happen. And I'm far prefer that it's being used than just sitting there, you know, gathering dust in a cupboard somewhere. So I'm slowly trying to do that. I have a large collection of fabrics that I've been purchasing and sewing since I was about 9 years old. Mm-hmm. And I'm gradually working through doing various projects with my fabric collection. So I'm slowly working through the different corners and rooms of my house, Di. But it would be hard pressed for that label minimalist to stick in too many ways, I think.
Right.
But certainly in terms of my wardrobe, I've made a start, and that's felt fabulous. So I think I will continue on with this journey.
Mm. Oh, that's great. And when you mentioned a moment ago about, you know, not using good things, like your mum did the dinner set, I had been clean out about 5 years ago, and I did exactly the same thing. I had these dishes and things that I never used, and they're beautiful. So now I use them too, and like you say, if they get broken, they get broken. Yeah, it's life.
Well, the other thing is too, I think that we have memories that attach to things. And I find that with my clothing as well as with, I do have some beautiful old pieces of china that belong to my great-grandmother, my grandmother's, my mother. I love to use those things. And when I'm getting them out of the cupboards, I'm thinking of the lovely memories that I have of, you know, times when I've been sitting around other people's tables and those items have been used. So clothes can do that too, I think. They get the layers of memory get hidden away in the fibres, and you can remember the other times, the good times that you've had wearing those things. And And I think that's really important. That's an important part of enjoying what we have. And that was a big message for me in my 50 Things project, was about actually celebrating the, you know, celebrating how much I already had, and understanding that with even 50 things, that was an abundance. Really, and learning to see things through that perspective. You know, Di, I spent, I think I mentioned, I spent about 15 years working in the humanitarian aid sector, and a lot of that time was spent working with refugees and people who'd been displaced from their homes. And for many of those people, 50 things would be astonishing wealth of treasures and possessions. Wow. And we've reached a point, I think, many of us in our lives, that we just forget how much we have. We take it for granted, and we've become greedy, and we've become very acquisitive. And getting back to the basics can, you know, can be a humbling experience, I think.
Yeah. Okay, now just hold that thought for a minute. I just have to say a few words here, Pam. Just hold on. So a reminder to anyone listening, if you wish to call in and pose a question, if you're in America, call 646-716-7979. If you're outside of North America, call in through http://tovtr.com/98001 57, or put a question up on Facebook. Now, a caller popped up before, and when I unmuted her, she wasn't there. So if that caller's still there, perhaps you might like to send a private message to me on Facebook, and I'm very happy if we don't get it within the time of the show, I'll get an answer from Pam and I'll reply to you. So a reminder, if anyone's just tuned in, our guest today is Pam Greet. She's a minimalist with passion. In 2016, she tackled a year-long project with an objective to contain her wardrobe to 50 items of clothing. And that included shoes, underwear, coats, jackets, socks and stockings. But it didn't include her accessories, which to Pam are earrings and scarves. She kept herself focused and honest by posting pictures and a comment about the project on her Facebook page, 50 Things 2016. So that's who we're speaking to today. Pam's sharing fabulous, interesting information and giving us a very different perspective. So welcome back, Pam.
Hi there.
Hello there. Now, we were talking about...
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. We were talking about, you mentioned before about the true cost to the fashion industry and, you know, not to be a slave. Well, we talked about the slave thing. So perhaps you might like to talk about the financial costs of being, you know, what's behind your thoughts.
So, Many of your listeners may have heard of the dreadful fire that occurred in Rana Plaza in Bangladesh. Now, that is going back, I think, to 2012 or maybe 2013. And this drew, I think for the first time, drew the attention of many, many people around the globe to the cost on people's lives of the industries that all sit behind the fashion industry. So this was a clothing factory in Bangladesh where a lot of women, many of them young women, but not all, working conditions were really quite appalling. There were safety issues with the building and a fire raced through there and hundreds of people lost their lives. So it really drew attention to some of the working conditions that sit behind the very, very cheap clothing that is available to us now in the first world. So that's one aspect, that aspect of the conditions under which, clothing is produced. That's one aspect of the cost of the fashion industry. But the other aspect that many people are not aware of is the environmental impact. And, there are not any textiles that are mass produced that don't have a negative impact on the environment. This goes to the chemicals that are used to produce the fibres, to soften the fibres, to allow the fibres to hold colour. The dyes that are used are very powerful chemicals that are often just dumped into waterways and have terrible impacts downstream. But then there's also, once we've purchased the clothes, the questions about how we launder those clothes or what we use here in the process of doing that. So we need to think about all of the aspects of of that. So many people are not aware, Di, that the environmental impact of the fashion industry has been measured as being second only to the mining industry in terms of its impact on the environment. And that is something that I think we need to stop and think about. Linked to that, there's statistics that have come out recently that demonstrate that Australians consume the second highest after the US amount of clothing in any given 12 months. So we're purchasing lots of stuff. But interestingly too, there's also been research done that shows that up to 20% of the clothes and textiles that we purchase are never, ever used. So people buy things, put them in their cupboards, and that's it. So I think going back to my four questions...
That's incredibly high, isn't it?
It is very high, and it's almost astonishing. It's almost unbelievable, but in 2014 in the UK, the research showed that 20% of the clothing that was purchased was unworn after 12 months. Another statistic was, again out of the UK, that each person in the UK produced in a 12-month period 35 kilograms of waste textile. 35 kilograms of waste textile.
Wow.
And of that 35 kilograms, only 13% was recycled or reused. So we often think with clothing, oh, you know, that's fine. I could give that to Lifeline or the Salvos or the Endeavour Foundation or whoever the local, you know, charity shop is, and someone else can use it. Now, much of that clothing is actually then sold overseas, like, so it's actually exported to third world countries. But as I said, this research in the UK showed that only 13% of the 35 kilograms of textiles that were waste each year from each individual, only 13% of that was actually reused.
That's
so
incredible.
Here's another, and then here's another statistic. The other thing that I have a big weakness for in my wardrobe, and some of my close friends know this, is I love coloured tights. And especially in the wintertime, I love to dress up, you know, those dark, drab days with a bright pair of stockings. Well, in 2013... there were 2 billion pairs of pantyhose manufactured. 2 billion pairs of pantyhose. And that figure is growing very, very significantly. So it's interesting when you think of how many people there are on the planet. Can we really use 2 billion pairs of pantyhose in 1 year?
That's incredible.
In 1 year. So,
yes.
I mean, when we think about pollution, we tend to think about cars and trucks, and we think about, you know, the rubbish out of our kitchen and, you know, cardboard and paper and plastics, but we don't often think about our clothing as being a significant source of you know, bulk rubbish or hard rubbish that needs to be disposed of. But this is increasingly an issue that we need to think about. So those were some of the thoughts that I guess were behind my choice to live my small is beautiful philosophy, at the very least, in terms of my clothing, and to look at how I could do that by just containing my wardrobe to natural fibres and then reducing back to those 50 things. And, you know, a lot of people have said to me, but oh my God, how on earth did you actually choose those 50 things? So I'm wondering, Di, if you'd like me to talk about that for a few minutes.
Okay, yeah, that'd be good. And we're starting to run out of time. We've got about 7 minutes left. The other question that I wanted to ask you was about your love affair with secondhand shops.
Ah.
So which would you like to answer first?
I'm happy to talk about my love affair with secondhand shops.
But we'll do that, and if we've got time, we'll come back to the other.
Okay, so do you have any particular questions there, or...
No,
You'd just like me to talk.
Tell me about your love affair with secondhand stores.
Okay, well, I guess this began when I was quite young, probably about 14 or 15. I remember that I really, really, really wanted a pair of jeans. And there was no way that I was going to be able to persuade my mother to buy me a pair of jeans. So there in the large regional town where I grew up, which was Townsville, there was a big Salvation Army secondhand store. And on a Friday afternoon after school, if I raced out of the schoolyard as quickly as I could and jumped on the bus, I could get into town by about 25 minutes to four, and that secondhand shop closed at 4 o'clock. So I could get off the bus and I could race up the hill to where the Salvos was and have 20 minutes of heaven going through the racks of clothing. Now, this secondhand shop was actually in an old army igloo made out of that curved galvanized iron.
Oh,
I don't know if you would have seen, there were a number of those sort of scattered over Queensland that were, you know, carried off and converted into warehouses or whatever. So the Salvation Army had got one of these. And it was sweltering, so hot. You have no idea how hot it was. And they would have
these huge fans.
And I thought I was in heaven. Not only did I manage to find myself a pair of jeans, which I think I paid something like, you know, $1.50 for or something, but I found all these beautiful old, you know, fabrics that I made. Wow. I used to make clothes and sell them at the markets. This is when I was 15, 16, caftans. Old ladies broderie anglais petticoats, I, you know, made into little tops and skirts and things like that. So that's where my love affair with secondhand shops began, because I actually couldn't afford to, as a young high school student, I couldn't afford to buy things new. And interestingly, I guess I did go through a phase of maybe 5 to 10 years in my 20s when I never went near a secondhand shop. But then I rediscovered this love. And, you know, where I live, I'm close to a number of really good secondhand shops. That a local church has one. There's a lady who raises money for cats that she looks after, who has a fabulous secondhand shop. The Salvos, the Endeavour Foundation, Lifeline, the Asthma Foundation, they're all, I know where they all are. And the thing that astonishes me is that I often find things that are brand new. As you know, I'm quite slim, so I find it quite easy to find things that fit me. And I am sure I have saved thousands and thousands of dollars by purchasing clothes at second-hand shops. And it, I guess it used to be the people used to have a bit of a block about that. They thought that, you know, only people who couldn't afford to buy new things shopped at second-hand shops.
Yeah,
but
right.
I really think that that attitude has changed enormously in the last few years.
I agree.
Certainly I know young people, they love secondhand and charity shops. And it's a great way to find things that are stylish, that are timeless. And I love the discovery of finding a treasure. So I wasn't allowed to do any shopping last year. I have enjoyed a couple of recent forays into my local secondhand stores. I will share that confession
amazing.
With you. Yeah.
Oh, excellent. I'm very pleased to hear that. Okay. Yeah, because I have my love affair with secondhand stores too, because I think that you find such interesting things. And with the fashion, if red's not in fashion this season, you can't buy anything red. And because I like all the peacocky colours, they're not always in fashion. And I love scratching around it, and so I'm right on your side with that, right in there. Now, before we close off, because you've given us so much information, such great tips about life, about a minimalist wardrobe, how we see ourselves in relation to fashion, and you've even got us thinking about the environmental angle. Thank you so much for sharing these stories. Now, before we close, what gem would you like to leave the listeners with today?
I guess my key message, Di, is that a small wardrobe doesn't have to be limiting. For me, I found it really liberating. I really did. And I know that I saved a lot of time and a lot of emotional energy. The important thing is whether you have a small wardrobe or a large wardrobe is to choose clothes that suit your style and don't be a slave to fashion. And this comes back again to your point about confidence being a habit.
Yeah.
It really is. You need to choose clothes that make you feel good. You need to choose clothes that will reflect your confidence. And the most important thing that you can wear is not an item of clothing. It's a smile. It's making eye contact with people and being open to people. Those are the important things that we carry with us and that we wear every day, regardless of how many things that we have in our wardrobe. Wear your confidence with a smile. Be proud to be who you are. That's my message, Di.
What a beautiful thought. Now, Pam, where can people find you if they want to know more?
Well, I hope, Di, that people do want to know more, because after the success of my project, I've actually decided that I'm working on an ebook, which is going to be called 50 Things 2016, Finding Joy in a Small Wardrobe. People can find me on Facebook, and if they just put 50 Things 2016 into Facebook, that's 50 Things 2016 with no spaces, all as one word, they will find my Facebook page and will be able to keep up with, I'll be putting updates in there about my book, and I also go back in there, even though my project is over, my year is over, I go back in there every week or so and share some of the lessons I've learned and look back on last year and think about what I've taken forward from that into my life now that it's 2017. So please like me on Facebook, 50 Things 2016, and stay in touch. I'd love to get the feedback from your listeners. Thank you.
Oh, that's amazing. Thank you so much, Pam. I've gained and learned so much from speaking to you today. mature women really are just so interesting for the different things that we do. And, you know, I really do believe that we're designed for confidence. It's just out there. It's just amazing. I love it. Love it, love it, love it. Now, so Pam, thank you very much. I've so enjoyed speaking with you today. It's been wonderful, and the time has just absolutely sped by.
Thanks for the opportunity, Di. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it was just amazing. And I like to round off each show with a quote. And I came across this one and I thought it just epitomises Pam. And it goes, I can't think of any better representation of beauty than when someone is unafraid to be herself. And that quote's by Emma Stone. I think it epitomises Pam, her genuineness and who she is in her own skin. Pam, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Di. It's been great.
Yeah.
All the best.
I've just loved hearing your stories. I mean, I love stories. I just love them. And I look forward to reading your book when it comes out.
Thank you.
Now, just a few minutes now, a couple of minutes, where I'd just like to talk back about Design for Confidence with Di. If confidence and how it works, and we've had some great tips from Pam this morning, if it sparks an interest in you, if you enjoy participating and supporting yourself and others, and you're open to different ways to look at confidence, this community and my online community could be for you. I've got a question for you, listeners. Just think for a moment about what a lack of confidence has cost you personally and professionally. What opportunities have you let pass by because you weren't game to have a go? If you'd like to do something about those thoughts, I run a 21-day online confidence challenge. Because, you know, when we're confident, as Pam said, the best accessory that you can wear is your smile. Confidence creates vibrancy, aliveness, and fun, and it's a surefire pickup for when things go awry. So if that's something that you think would be of interest to you, send me a message via Facebook, and I would be very pleased to send you the link. I'm actually starting one next Monday, another program next Monday, so if it's up your alley, that would be wonderful. You can contact me on email at di@diridell.com, diridell.com, on the web at diridell.com, or on Facebook at Confidence Beyond 50. It was absolutely wonderful being your host today. Cheerio, I hope you enjoyed Pam's presentation as much as I did, and do tune in for the next Design for Confidence with Di show, which will be on the 24th of January, to hear my next amazing guest. She's a lady, a 64-year-old lady, who took herself over to France and did the Camino walk. So I know she'll be full of interest. So cheerio for now, and I look forward to seeing you all on and talking to you on Friday, the 24th of January. Bye for now.
I can do anything. I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want.